8:33, it's time for Ask the Vet. Dr. Cliff Miller is in this morning, our guest expert. If you have a question, we've got open phones here this morning for you. 263-2424, the Moberly line, Sheridan Valley line, 388-6424. Or you can give us a call at 800-892-2300. We're going to start off talking about Parasite Prevention Month here in April. So since we're colder than normal, we don't have to worry about parasites, right?
Well, I wish that were the case.
It's not the case.
No, it's not the case. Certainly, this is not yet the typical April in regards to the numbers and prevalence of some of the common parasites, but it's also a good example of how they will overwinter and not necessarily care about the temperature. As soon as it hits 60 today, if you'd walk around the woods, I'll guarantee you there will be ticks that are climbing those plants and looking for a host. So
we did a critter care program, and we didn't have nearly enough time to talk about the number of species of ticks. You say we've got just about all.
Yeah, Missouri's pretty blessed in parentheses in regards to the prevalence of what populations. If you look at a national map of all the different tick species that we deal with, and especially look at what tick species carry diseases to humans, Missouri has nearly all of them. There's a couple on the west coast, like Rocky Mountain ticks, that are pretty specific, but really, we've got the majority of them. Even the Gulf Coast tick, which you would assume by the name that would be more to the Gulf Coast, but it kind of makes a little point up towards Missouri and covers all but maybe the very northern tips of our state as well.
And they just figure out a way to survive the winters.
Yes, they similar to you've heard the stories of freezing a cockroach in an ice cube kind of thing. Ticks take very little insulation. They'll be under a little leaf pile, they're up against, you know, the mulch around the tree type thing. Takes very little, and what I think a lot of people don't realize is the lifespan of a tick. Many species, and they're variant, but many of them are 3 or 4 years old, in that they'll have one of their life cycles as an egg, they'll go to a pupa and larva and an adult, and they'll feed, and then that feeding may, you know, get them through to the next year as far as that next life cycle. So they have multiple opportunities to find a host over several years.
With ticks becoming such a problem to health, to human health as well, not just our pets, is there any talk in the industry about trying to come up with some spray or something? I don't know that it's all that effective on mosquitoes, but I know communities do spray
right.
for mosquitoes. What?
It's a real big challenge because the difference in a lot of our different parasites, ticks are unique in that they spend so little time on the host, but yet that time on the host preserves them for a long time. So, yes, there's discussion, but it's a big challenge. They're pretty resistant with their shell as far as like a perimeter spray or, you know, broadcasting a spray, those kinds of things. Similar to how you may have your home treated and still have spiders slip through the cracks, it's because of how you know, their resistance and how they're elevated. Ticks are out there kind of insulated. They're in that little pile of brush. You have a hard time penetrating and getting to them. But then they find that host who then is also a reservoir, so to speak. That tick walking around on a deer is going to be pretty hard for anybody to treat or prevent its progression and feeding and so on.
So the tick is the perfect parasite.
If there's such a thing, they're pretty close, yeah.
Your questions are welcome here on the program regarding ticks, mosquitoes, fleas, or any pest or anything on your mind. You've got Dr. Miller until 9 o'clock free of charge.
There you go.
So as far as our pets, is the best prevention to pre-treat in some way, be it to oral or...
Right on. So this has changed significantly over the last 20-ish years. Frontline was probably the pioneer as far as a reliable preventative. And, you know, I may be... Time flies, but I think Frontline's in the neighborhood of 25 years old since its launch. And so then there's been several generations of topical preventatives similar to that. But these insects adapt, and we don't have resistances per se to most of the big name topicals, but it takes a little longer to kill. And the problem then with something like a tick that's carrying a disease, even if it is killed by a preventative, if they've had a chance to feed and potentially transmit that disease, if they die a couple hours later, we've kind of missed the boat on why we want to prevent. So the current newest generation of medications or oral drugs that have a much faster kill, and believe it or not, it doesn't make sense that an oral drug that the tick has to bite the species, the host, in order to receive it versus a topical, but they die so fast that they're not able to transmit the disease.
All right, we've got a phone call coming in. Let's go to the 800 line. You're on with Dr. Cliff Miller.
Yeah, I've got a little dog that last fall or summer, he ran under a neighbor's camper mm-hmm. and ripped his back open all the way down. And there was one little spot on there that had dead skin, and they had to take that off of there.
Mm-hmm.
And all the hairs came back except that one little spot. And I was wondering, will that ever come back? Is there anything I can put on there to help it? Help it come back.
Nothing really that you could help come back with scarring. A true scar will seldom grow hair, but yet with time, scars will shrink too. The body's pretty amazing how it continues to contract that scar and change. So, my guess is that you will see some improvement over time, but odds are, if there was a big enough area that's scarred in, you'll probably always have a bald spot there to deal with.
It ripped all the way down his back when he went underneath there. But then it's just got that one little spot, you know, that, like I said, it had dead skin. They had, it didn't heal it and had to cut that one little spot right off of there.
Yeah, it probably will always be a little, his badge of honor to tell the other dogs how tough he was. That probably will always be a little scarred there.
That's right. The girls like those.
Right.
All right. Thank you for the call. Your phone calls are welcome. Your open phones here on Ask the Vet. So going back to the preventative medicines to keep ticks off our pets, are over-the-counter satisfactory, or do you need to see your veterinarian for a
really
prescription?
Really, for reliable, the prescriptions are considerably better.
Get on a program, then.
Right on. And some of that is dependent on your risk. So there are over-the-counter products that do good enough job if you have very minimal risk that you're probably fine. If you have the risk of running into a tick once every never, odds are your dog won't get ticks. But you don't have to have an animal that goes out in the country and runs through the woods, obviously, to get ticks. Even the little, on the edge of a mowed lawn, if there's a little strip of trees, or if a little kind of green space where it's not mowed and kept and so on, that's a perfect place for tick transmission, because the deer and the turkey and the wildlife go through there at night. That tick larva has already fed on one of those and drops down, and he's just waiting till your dog or cat come through the neighborhood and they'll hop on board. So
mm-hmm.
More often than not, I would tell you a prescription type medication is going to be a lot more reliable.
All right, so the annual the question on pulling the tick if you see it on your pet.
Absolutely can do so. You do need to be careful that you're getting it as much as possible. The kind of fears, I guess, of leaving the head is not as big a deal as far as the disease transmission as much as just an irritant. You will have if you leave a mouth part or a piece of that tick, there'll be a bump, there'll be itchy, it'll be sore, and, you know, your pet doesn't know why, and they'll claw at it and so on. So I don't get real worked up about making sure or digging out every little bitty piece, but I certainly would encourage somebody, if they find them, to get as close down to the skin as possible and pull that tick. And what works really well is a spork. You know, if you can kind of put that tick up in the V of that spork, and as long as you've got it snug, it'll pull it out rather than you trying to hold it on with fingertips. Don't use lighters. Don't use any of those kinds of things, thinking you're going to back that tick out, you need to pull it out.
Okay. And what are signs to watch for if we think maybe a pet has had a tick?
So tick diseases are pretty subtle, unfortunately. And what we know, not only from pets but from humans as well, it may be quite some time before it manifests itself too. So it's sometimes hard to make that, oh, I pulled a tick, you know, 3 weeks ago kind of connection if there's weird symptoms. But tick diseases can come in lots of forms. Lethargy, being really sore, you know, arthritic type symptoms. We can have spontaneous bleeding. We can have fevers, weakness, big lymph nodes. I mean, the gamut. And some of that depends on the type. We have ehrlichiosis in this area. We have Lyme disease. We have anaplasmosis, Rocky Mountain spotted fever. So you name it, we've got the in our pet species, we've got similar problems that what humans could face as far as the tick diseases as well.
You suppose we've had human illnesses over the years that were tick related that we didn't know about?
Absolutely.
We're learning more about?
Absolutely. I have zero doubts in that regard. Just knowing how prevalent we see, how common some of these tick diseases are, and part of how we're able to know that in the pet species, with some of our diagnostic tests, for example, there's called a 40X test, which is a snap test, almost looks like a pregnancy test, with color changes and dots. We use a drop of blood to do that test. Well, the maker of that test provides a what's called a snap reader. So we put that in a little machine and it reads. They're smart enough to have that communicate, do like daily downloads to know disease prevalence. And there's a huge, forgive me for misquoting here, but it's in the neighborhood of over 5% of dogs in Missouri that are just randomly tested. Not that are tested because they're symptomatic, but randomly tested that show positive on that test. So the amount of exposure is pretty doggone high.
Okay. Cats and dogs and deer, bigger livestock, not as big a problem?
No, we see it. Some of the diseases not as big a problem, but cattle anaplasmosis is a huge economic factor. Causes anemia in cattle, can cause poor reproductive performance. We tend to see it in older cattle, so you don't necessarily see it in the calves, but cows and bulls it's from anywhere from acute death, which is common in an infected bull that is working hard and he's trying to chase around cows all over the pasture, and all of a sudden he becomes so weak that he dies, to just cows that don't breed back as quickly and so on. So anaplasmosis is fairly regional, but it is endemic in our area. It's absolutely around everywhere, and seldom are there cow herds that don't have some level of exposure. And then the main reservoir there is our ticks as well.
And again, cattle producers get ahead of it. That's the only thing you can do, or
yeah, to some degree, it's a cow herd has some level of immunity themselves. So if we're not having problems and the cows are doing well, that tells me in most herds they've established an immunity to where they're. Resistant is the right word, but they tolerate it. They kind of kumbaya, and that they've built up enough immunity. There are some cow herds that need treatment, be it daily medications in their feed or something like that, to singling out those sick individuals and aggressively treating those as well.
All right, Dr. Cliff Miller's in studio with me. It's Parasite Prevention Month. That's our topic, but you can ask any question here. We have open phone lines. For you, it's Ask the Vet.
What if? Two words that can change your life.
Without my kidney and lung transplants, I would not be a husband or father.
Without my bone transplant, I would not be holding my baby niece.
Without a kidney transplant, my husband and I would not be active today.
Each year, over 60 Missourians die waiting for a transplant.
What if?
What if?
What if it were you?
Don't let what ifs change your life. Sign up to be a donor. Go to donatelifemo.org. Sponsored by the Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services.
See you tomorrow, Eric. I'm going to run by Kids Caboose and pick up some groceries before I head home.
You said you were going to Kids Caboose to buy groceries.
That's right. They've started selling selected food items. It's a quick in and out to pick up lots of things when I'm downtown anyway.
I didn't know that. I need something too. I'm right behind you.
Yes, friends. Whether you need a snack for your break, something to eat for lunch at your desk, or a quick item or two to complete what you're cooking for dinner, visit the dining car inside Kids Caboose in downtown Moberly. Now open until 5:30 weekdays and until 4 on Saturday.
Ask the Vet here on Quick Slant this morning. Phone lines Moberly 263-2424 if you have a question. Sheridan Valley line 388-6424. Or you can call 800-892-2300. Next on our hit list is mosquitoes.
So they need to be on.
So are you ranking? Are you ranking ticks worse than mosquitoes, or
well,
mosquitoes?
Well, I think in disease prevalence in our area, yes, but worldwide, mosquitoes are clearly the leader in cause of death and illness and so on. But we, at least in Missouri / the United States, have enough disease prevention and mosquito prevention to stay on top of most of those deadly diseases.
Now, will the cold at least limit them?
Until it warms up. So, similar thing. Really, it's virtually impossible to assume that a harsh winter or a prolonged winter, for example, like we're dealing with, will change population significantly. Agreeable weather certainly can boost their populations, but cold isn't going to knock them from one year to the next.
Got a phone call. Hi, you're on with Dr. Cliff Miller.
Hi, Dr. Miller. We took our dogs hiking, and one of our dogs got a small thorn in its foot area, the paw.
Mm-hmm.
We were able to pull it out. We didn't see any blood, anything like that. About a week later, she started limping on that leg. We've kind of felt around a little bit. We can't find anything that makes her jerk away, whether it's on her leg or her joints or her pads. Is that something that needs to be checked out, or if it continues?
Yeah, I think if it would continue, it would be a matter of ruling out other problems. So I think the obvious assumption would be, okay, we had a thorn. We're having a residual effect from the thorn, which is very possible. And if that's the case, we know those thorns can cause an inflammatory reaction and have soreness for some time later. So that makes sense. And if it's slowly improving in the days to come, I would probably chalk it up to that. However, having gone hiking also could be a player there, in that we have strain, sprain, you know, arthritic change, something that's unrelated to the thorn. And if that's continuing, then it's certainly worthwhile for an exam to rule out other inflammatory conditions or other, you know, soft tissue or joint injuries that, you know, are making basically the thorn be that red herring that doesn't have any real correlation, just kind of coincidental.
Okay. If there was some kind of a small infection or something, what signs would there be?
Usually it will manifest as far as coming to a head, so to speak, or having a discharge or something like that. Redness and inflammation at the site, certainly. I have seen instances where there's still a piece of that thorn in there that can crop up a few weeks later. The body finally gets angry at it enough to where you've got kind of a walled-off little sterile abscess, and that will show up almost pimple-esque or something like that, in the sense of a little area of pustule or a little pus that's underneath the skin there.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Thank you for the call. Open phones here this morning if you have a question. Back to mosquitoes. Same type of a treatment, preventative for our pets?
Yeah. So our number one thing we deal with mosquito diseases in our area is heartworm. So we traditionally fight heartworm / mosquitoes by that monthly heartworm preventative, and that is absolutely the recommendation. However, we now know of resistant heartworms, in that post-Hurricane Katrina, the mosquito populations around the Gulf of Mexico were so astronomically high, and apparently enough mutations within reproductive mosquitoes, that we had proof of resistances to our traditional heartworm preventatives. Luckily, knock on wood, we don't have evidence of that being quite to our area. But each year, the map, we see that that resistance is moving a little further north, and we know, we have proof of it having come up the Mississippi River as far as St. Louis County. So with time, that will move over the Missouri River to us, no doubt. But since what the American Heartworm Society has recommended is not only that monthly heartworm preventative, but a preventative medication that covers mosquito repellency as well. So somewhat counter to what I was just talking about with the oral medications for ticks, some of the topical medications have flea, tick, and mosquito on them. And so in a high-risk dog, that ought to be at least considered is a topical preventative as well. Still, the gold standard is going to be that oral monthly heartworm preventative, but if we want to really cover the basis, doing something for mosquito repellency will be a little extra insurance policy as well.
Where do mosquitoes go in the winter?
They basically, in their reproductive cycle, those eggs or those pupa are still in the mud or the ice.
They just hang out until it's warm.
They're just waiting until a warm day.
Wow.
Or our house. I should start my own little journal or something of when I see it, but I was always taught it takes 5 days of 50 degrees for mosquitoes to hatch. That's what I was taught. I'm a Missourian. I've seen it. I've shown myself, so to speak. I've seen it at 3 days, and it's not always 50, because I had a mosquito buzz in the window a few weeks ago when we had a really nice warm day, and we'd not had those consecutive days.
Okay. Cats have issues with mosquitoes?
They do. Cats can get heartworm disease. The heartworm in cat is what we call an accidental infection, meaning that's not the target species, not the target host. It does not do some of the things that we see in dogs with the severity of the disease as far as how many worms are in the heart, but it will cause a profound lung inflammation, pneumonia-esque or COPD-esque as far as how much reactive tissue in the lungs. So we can still see respiratory symptoms in cats. They also commonly will have skin sensitivity, so the tips of the ears will be raw and inflamed and itchy, and that's often a mosquito sensitivity. And that's a good target area for a mosquito because it's thin-haired and easy blood supply, too.
So. All right. Should we bring fleas into the discussion before
sure.
we wrap up?
Sure, yeah.
Do fleas take a season off? Or do
no.
They?
The indoor pets, it doesn't matter what the season is. Or it's always, 70 degrees in the house kind of thing. And I heard a parasitologist probably put it best. We don't have them 365 days a year outside, but we have them 12 days a year. Mm-hmm. Or 12 months a year. Mm-hmm. So few warm days. The even the barn cats that cuddle up in the hayloft kind of thing together, that skin temperature is perfectly conducive to that flea hanging out on that animal. And the big difference between the life cycle of a flea and a tick is 99% of the lifespan of a flea is spent on the host. So other than that egg and pupa having a safe environment, a warm enough environment to hatch, from there that parasite is on the host and the skin temperature is perfectly fine, whatever the weather.
We get this question sometimes on Party Line. If you got fleas in the house, do you have a remedy or do you have
It's a multi-pronged approach. Absolutely have to treat the animals, and not just the animal that you see with the flea. That's a common one I get is, well, we treated the dog, but, I really don't see him on the cat. Well, the reality is then the cat is serving as that reservoir. Mm-hmm. One female can lay 80,000 eggs in her lifetime. So if you've got a breeding pair of fleas, and those two fleas are on that cat, you could very quickly replicate a problem. And it has to be consecutive months. You can't just treat the animals 1 month and assume that you've eliminated them, because that egg can wait 90 days in order to hatch if need be. So in the right environment, it can hang out. The pupa can take even longer than that, up to 6 months. You could board a house up, no animal, no human go in there, and 6 months later walk in, and not only your body heat, but the motion, boom, you could have eggs hatching, and they literally jump on, they hatch and jump on. It's that fast.
Carpets, you got to...
Carpets, wood floors. I've got pretty cool videos of where companies and researchers have gone in with teeny tiny cameras and the lint in the cracks of a wood floor, and there's flea eggs down in there. So the assumption that, well, I've got all hard surfaces, that doesn't hold water. Fleas don't care. If an animal brings them in the house, or if you bring them in the house, and there's a male and a female, you can have fleas in the house.
So treat the animals, but carpets and things.
But also, also treat the environment. So you can technically effectively eliminate the problem by only treating the animals, but it's going to take months. Whereas if you treat the house and the animals, you can speed that along. We have products that will kill the eggs, kill the adults, kill the larva. We have nothing that will kill pupa, which are kind of like the cocoon of a flea. No product will penetrate that. So unless you are doing it month to month, those pupa, let's say you go in and spray the house and you kill all the eggs, and you treat your pets and you kill all the adults on them, when that pupa hatches, you could start that over if you're not doing an ongoing preventative.
Well, it's been a lovely discussion this
morning. Hasn't it? I'm sure half the people have turned the radio off because I've grossed them out. But
well, these are issues we have to deal with.
Right on.
Especially pet owners.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, Parasite Prevention Month. See your local vet. Get your treatments, right?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thanks for dropping by.
My pleasure.
Okay, that is our Ask the Vet segment with Dr. Cliff Miller.
This station identification is brought to you by Columbia.